Yukiora joins me in the studio. Hi, Yuka.
Hi, Inka.
So the US and the EU have restarted trade negotiations to try to settle sticking points left unresolved in their tariff deal that was reached in July.
That's right. Well, US Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick and Trade Representative Jamieson Greer met with EU ministers and top officials in Brussels today. It's the first high-level meeting since the US government reopened after a six-week shutdown. Washington wants the EU to ease regulations on the tech sector, while Europe is seeking to lower US tariffs on steel and aluminium that have remained at 50% despite the July deal. Under that agreement, the bloc agreed to buy hundreds of billions of euros in American energy and boost its investments in the United States in exchange for keeping the tariff rate at 15% for most European exports. But the deal is not legally binding yet, and the Trump administration has been frustrated at the EU for being slow to implement it.
Our suggestion is that the European Union and their trade ministers deeply consider trying to analyze their digital rules, find the balanced approach that works with us. And if they can come up with that balanced approach, which I think they can, then we will, together with them, handle the steel and aluminum issues.
There's not such a thing as a free lunch. And I think the best way we all could pay back is by, as you said, leaning in and fulfilling the implementation of what we have already agreed.
Well, let's go on to the next story now, Yuka. Sorry, a major international conference on protecting wildlife has kicked off today, hasn't it?
Delegations from 185 nations are meeting in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, to discuss ways to protect hundreds of species of wild animals and plants that are under threat. The aim is to ensure that international trade in them is sustainable, both in terms of species conservation and economic development. But like with COP climate talks, some proposals are proving divisive. Luke Schrager has the details.
From what to do about ivory and rhino horn stockpiles to protecting shark species and tackling the eel trade, all issues for the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna, with signatories now meeting for the first time in around 3 years.
Population growth, globalization, shifting markets, these forces are accelerating. To succeed, we must focus on what matters most for conservation and align our resources to deliver impact.
Not everyone's on the same page, though. Questions are swirling over how to protect the global eel trade. They're a popular food in parts of Asia, particularly Japan, but certain species are under threat. Populations are falling worldwide due to man-made factors like pollution, overfishing, and the destruction of habitat. A 2010 EU ban of its critically endangered eels, though, led to an explosion in smuggling of the creatures before they reach maturity. Since eels don't breed in captivity, Japan imports most of what it needs, nearly three-quarters of the 61,000 tons eaten there last year, and it's been vocal in its opposition to any further restrictions.
The EU proposal does not take into account the latest scientific studies or the conservation efforts undertaken by each country. It treats all eel species worldwide as one group subject to trade restrictions. We believe this approach lacks scientific basis.
Other proposals at the forum include permitting government sales of elephant ivory and rhino horn, long stockpiled from seizures in the illegal trade. Proponents say it would raise needed funding for further conservation efforts, but animal protection groups fear the move could drive illicit sales.
Well, meanwhile, Yuka, there was some disappointment in the pharmaceutical industry surrounding a highly anticipated clinical trial.
Danish pharmaceutical giant Novo Nordisk took a beating in the stock market, dropping as much as 10% at one point, hitting a four-year low and ending the day down by about 6%. Now, this after trials for Alzheimer's disease failed to achieve their main goal. The tests were carried out to see if semaglutide, the active ingredients in the company's weight loss drugs Ozempic and Wegovy, would help slow the progressions of the brain-wasting disease. While treatment with the drug resulted in improvements of some biomarkers related to Alzheimer's, it did not translate into a delay of its progression, the company concluded after testing it on nearly 4,000 patients. The setback dashed hopes for a new use for the blockbuster diabetes drug, which could open a new market. Analysts had called the trial a long shot, and Novo Nordisk itself had described it as a lottery ticket because it had a huge potential while being highly uncertain.
Well, here in France, Swiss food giant Nestlé is facing another court case, isn't it?
Yeah, this after just after surviving a high-profile case over the natural mineral water labelling of its iconic sparkling drink Perrier. This time, Nestlé's subsidiary Nestlé Waters is being held responsible by environmentalists for tens of thousands of plastic bottles dumped illegally near Vittel in Vaud region. The lawsuit was initially scheduled to start in May of this year and then delayed to November, and on Monday it was further postponed to next March. Gabrielle Nadler has more.
Here, in Teissy-Montfort, one of Nestlé Waters' illegal dump sites, 42,000 cubic meters of plastic waste lie buried underground. A disaster waiting to happen, according to environmental groups.
This plastic must be removed at all costs, because it is a time bomb that will pollute our underground water sources when it decomposes. It's a real catastrophe.
The investigation, ordered by Nancy's Public Prosecutor's Office, revealed the level of microplastics to be several million times higher than normal. In France's northeastern Vosges region, three other illegal dump sites filled with plastic bottles near Nestlé Waters sites are under investigation. Among them is Saint-Ouen-les-Parets.
If these landfills ever leak, where will all the waste that come out of them go? The day or days when the waste enters our drinking water, it's not the prefecture, it's not the state, it's not Nestlé that will be held responsible, it's the mayor.
Nestlé says the sites, which contain water bottles dating back to the 1960s, belong to subsidiaries like Vittel, before being acquired by them. The corporation says it's waiting for direction from authorities on how to best clean the remaining sites. This is far from the first time Nestlé's been in trouble with the law. Earlier this year, a French Senate inquiry found that the company profited from alleged consumer fraud, falsely advertising its products, including Perrier, as natural mineral water.